Hi, everybody out there. This is Xenia Seberg. And who are you? Because I'm there no matter where you are. Because this is Dr. Fred Bell's show on BBS Radio.
Health Science and Energy Show on BBSRadio.com.
We'll make you sound better than you sound right now.
Well, that's a good thing. For me, it's like midnight here. I'm going to bed, which doesn't matter to you guys. Aren't you ready? Stay tuned. BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned into The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what insanely silly things we find to squabble over. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322, or you can call us direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out one of those old-fashioned 20th century on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or extra-humanly possible on the station archives. My own blog is located at howtheneoconsoldfreedom.blogspot.com. My blog at the top for this week is one you should read before the article coming out on Blackstone, which will be up this weekend. The title of the article is, "You're Not Paranoid. The Securities Exchange Commission is out to get you." Actually, they're not out to get you, just your money, your life, and your future. And they did that. You just don't know it yet. But I go into how they accomplished all of that if you're not one of the 28,000 richest people on Earth, and if you're not entirely off those nasty, ugly grids. You may not yet know it, but you could be toast. So be warned. At least you will not be lonely. Most of the world is in the same boat. So read the SEC article and then catch Blackstone Group Limited Partnership, your piece of the sinking rock. Now, as never before, you had better give some thought to getting off the grids. As to what has been happening this week in presidential politics, Ron Paul tops McCain in cash on hand. ABC News' George Stephanopoulos reports, though often regarded as a long-shot candidate for president, a Republican Ron Paul tells ABC News that he has an impressive $2.4 million in cash on hand after raising an equal amount during the second quarter, putting him ahead of one-time Republican frontrunner John McCain, who reported this week he has only $2 million in the bank. In an exclusive interview taped Friday and airing Sunday on This Week, Paul said his campaign is on a better trajectory than McCain's. I think some of the candidates are on the downslope, and we're on the upslope, said Paul. Paul's cash on hand puts him in third place in the Republican field in that important metric, although he is well behind leader Rudy Giuliani, who has $18 million in the bank, and Mitt Romney with $12 million. And now a report from South Carolina where Ron Paul was told to keep away from Spartanburg by the GOP chairman just days ago. 2 days after saying Ron Paul should stay out of Spartanburg County, GOP Chairman Rick Beltham on Thursday reversed course and invited the Republican presidential candidate to come on down. And Thursday afternoon, Paul's campaign agreed. The only thing left to be settled is the date. Beltram on Tuesday called Paul a lunatic for defending a theory that American intervention in foreign affairs contributed to the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack on New York and Washington, D.C. Paul made the comments at the GOP debate in Columbia in May, and he drew an angry response from former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. After the debate, Beltram decided he had heard enough from the Texas congressman and said Paul should stay home. A flood of emails and voicemails from across the country apparently changed Beltram's mind. Quote, I was told by at least 125 emails and 25 voicemails that I didn't hear correctly, newspapers didn't report it correctly, and live TV didn't reflect it correctly, Beltram said. If we're all that naive and we all misunderstood, I think they should come on down and tell us how they're wrong. And I think the people of Spartanburg will be anxious to listen. Beltram, in an email, proposed that Paul open his Spartanburg visit with a 10-minute presentation and then take 12 questions from the audience. Jesse Belton, a spokesman for Paul's campaign, said the format would be worked out after a date was set. Ron Paul, of course, has accepted the invitation. Personally, I think Spartanburg is about to become a Ron Paul stronghold. And now a few vignettes on the Ron Paul revolution. If you happen across the Ron Paul Graphics Yahoo group online, you find people exchanging emails on the literature they're producing and passing out. These determined volunteers are paying for this themselves, and the signs and brochures come in an amazing range of approaches. Ron Paul volunteers also produce an astonishing proliferation of videos and other material for which they fork over their own cash. Now that's the real mark of a grassroots campaign. At the 4th of July parade in Ames, Iowa volunteers for Ron passed out thousands of cards, lit up bracelets for children, and candy. They billed the literature as Mind Candy for Adults. And people were seen reading these with rapt attention as they waited for the parade to start. Ben Olson, the Ron Paul Republican interim chair in Iowa, reported that the brand C for corporation candidates had a lot of paid staffers standing around in clumps. The volunteers were all there for Ron. Why are we not surprised? Iowa is now working toward the Iowa straw poll to be held August 12th in Ames. More on that later. In Florida, the National Young Republicans are meeting in the small shoreside town of Hollywood. Arriving attendees were met by a contingent of 30 Ron Paul volunteers with banners and signs, doing a sign wave on the street outside the host hotel. According to Jeff Palmer, a Republican attending the event, the response from those arriving was enthusiastic. Inside at the Ron Paul booth, dozens of individuals, including many in the YR leadership, took the Nolan Chart Test, also known as the world's smallest political quiz. Those scoring the test noted that nearly all participants fell in the quadrant that also contains Ron Paul, though no other Republican candidate shared that ideological territory with them. And now, our thought for the week ahead. Not so very long ago, it seemed as if Americans would never be able to effectively take action against the ominous grasp of greed exerted by corporations and their neocon flunkies. But times, they are a-changing. In the wake of the 4th of July, more than ever before, Americans are talking about the Declaration and its meaning. From the mainstream to discussion groups online, the 4th seems to have marked a sea change in the consciousness of Americans on their own history, their rights, and government. Today, Americans are beginning to fight back. Left and right are coming together to confront the hard questions raised by the cancellation of habeas corpus, the war in Iraq, and the war on the prosperity of America with the North American Union. the policy of the Bush administration of promoting illegal immigration as a means for subsidizing corporations and providing cheap, easily controlled workers whose costs are then paid out of our tax dollars. In other words, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. It's literally true that so many people are working for change that it is impossible to keep track of all the causes and movements. But it's also true that they are coming together across boundaries that once seemed to be chasms as deep as the Grand Canyon. Our guest tonight, Representative Jim Guest, was elected to the Missouri House of Representatives in 2002 with a class of 90 new representatives. This large class was a result of term limits being voted in by the citizens of Missouri. A graduate of the University of Missouri-Rolla, he holds a B.S. degree in mechanical engineering and an M.S. degree in engineering management. After 12 years in aerospace with Douglas Aircraft in California, he went into business for himself in northwest Missouri. Jim is an active member of his church and his community. As a state legislator, he knew immediately that action needed to be taken to oppose the real ID. The movement that springs from that is bringing together Americans from all over the country to oppose the latest link in the shackles that are intended to convert America into a feudal state. According to Jim Guest, this is a completely nonpartisan issue with supporters split nearly evenly between Republican and Democrat. Guest is himself a Republican who is supporting Ron Paul for the presidential nomination of his party. Representative Guest will let you know what you can do to turn back this imminent threat to our sovereignty as an American people and a program that moves power not to the federal level, but to the international level as an adjunct of the North American Union. We can now see the outline of the plan to turn America into that plantation. Despite its name and the smooth arguments advanced, the real ID is real fascism. Starting in just 3 years, the federal government intended to make it impossible for you, an American, to open a bank account, travel on a plane, collect Social Security payments, or take advantage of nearly any government service. A frightening thought when you think about what government service means. Please welcome Jim Guest. Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, I'm so glad that you could join us today.
Well, it's a pleasure, an honor to be on your program this afternoon.
I really appreciate that. And we always start by asking our guests to say a little bit about themselves, which is why I didn't say too much about your family. But your family is one of the reasons you're doing what you're doing, right?
Of course. You know, I sit there and, I think it's a duty upon us to protect freedom for our children and our children's children. And I certainly don't want to sit on the front steps of my house with my grandchildren someday and say, you know, I can remember back when this used to be a free country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we need to fight for. Yes, I'm married and I have two children and two wonderful granddaughters who live in Kansas City. And, you know, like all parents and grandparents, they want to continue to make this country free and provide a better life for their children and their grandchildren. And I think that's what it's all about, to continue this tradition. Our forefathers fought and established this country and freedom for us, and I think it's due to us to continue to fight for it and make sure that they can enjoy what we've enjoyed in the past.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So what got you started on the real ID?
Well, probably 2 years ago in 2005 when it first was tacked on to H.R. 418, the bill that passed in Congress with very little debate. And, you know, actually this sort of slipped it in there. The H.R. 418 was a bill that's $82 billion supplemental funding for the Iraq War, and also some charitable tsunami relief. So, you know, it was a bill that most congressmen and senators felt like they had to vote for, and this real ID was tacked on to in the House side. And then when it went to the Senate, they never even had any debate for it. They went straight to a vote, and sometimes you wonder whether the senators really knew what was on. So that's how it got slipped in there. You know, gained a little bit of attention at that point. It made the news and kind of died out. However, I started working on about a year ago when it was going to become part of the voter ID bill here in Missouri. That was sort of the forerunner to the real ID.
Mm-hmm.
This year, this is when I stepped up and filed some legislation to oppose it. And at some point I realized there that even if I was successful here in Missouri in getting this repealed or stopped, that the citizens of Missouri would become de facto citizens. You know, they'd be isolated since you couldn't participate in any federal program or get on a plane or anything. So I realized that, found out that New Hampshire and Montana had been working on this, and they were taking the lead. So I conferred with them and saw what action they were doing. So I decided to form a coalition of states to get other states to go along with what we were working on.
Mm-hmm.
So as I called leadership in other states, some of them were aware of it and some were not, so I would send them model legislation that we were using and encourage them to file some. And this momentum just kept going, and I think we've got about 26 states who have filed some form of legislation or passed some form of legislation to oppose the Real ID Act. We've got another 10 or 12 states who have legislation in process. So we have, the voice of the people is being heard around the country, and we need to get those people in Washington to realize that the people of this country, just like they did about a week ago, are going to stand up and fight for freedom.
Mm-hmm. So you found them to be very responsive, though, as soon as they understood what was really going on.
Yes, I think most people, several states were kind of aware of what was going on, but they really wasn't quite sure what action to take. And, one thing to find out that other states are taking action on, they quickly joined in, and like you said earlier, this was strictly a bipartisan effort. Most states jumped on board. It didn't make any difference whether the party was, the state was controlled by Democrats or Republicans, and so that's where we, that's how we got started.
Mm-hmm. And you have your group is called, because you started a group called Legislators Against the Real ID.
Yes.
And your website is legislatorsagainstrealid.com.
Yes, and that was one way. We kind of need some way of a focal point. Everybody could come together and monitor what was going on, and we're continually updating that so anyone can log on there to find out the status in their state. And we got the news articles and other articles that's been written so people can, if they're not familiar with it, they can log on there and quickly get up to speed about what the Real ID Act and what the implications are of that. So.
Mm-hmm. And how many legislators and members of the group?
Oh, we have...
And how can we get our legislators to join?
Oh, that's what we need to do is, continually... like I said, we've got 36 states that have got legislation filed. We've got almost all states, somebody committed to filing legislation. Some states are not in session right now, of course. So
mm-hmm.
we've got a few states that we're not making the progress there that we would like to. But then, with over half the states filing some form of legislation, I think we've made a huge step forward to getting the attention of Congress that the people out here in this country are not going to stand for what they want to put on their backs as far as this national ID card.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought about putting something on your site so people can invite their legislators to join Legislators Against ID?
That's being done. People will
Great.
Call us, and I say, contact your local legislator, get them on board, ask them where they stand on this so they can join in and be a part of this. So they, many people who call me supporters in different states are getting their legislators on board on this, either at the state level or even at the national level. They're calling them and finding out where they stand on this particular issue.
Mm-hmm. But do you have national members then who are legislators?
Actually, this is probably just a movement of the state here. Now, I've got a couple U.S. senators that I hope to meet with who push it at the national level. There's been some hearings at the national level on repealing the Real ID Act, but then, when they pass something in Washington, D.C., they're a little bit reluctant to repeal it, so we will continually to make a push there. But as more and more states say no to this, it's going to be, I think, more difficult for our U.S. congressmen and senators to not take notice and seriously consider repealing this.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like as you have more people join you on this issue, are you getting a kind of a grow out into other issues? Because, of course, this extrapolates into many other issues.
You're exactly right. This coalition of states, I hope, will give me support to what I call my 5 points to free America that I've come up with, which I think that the other freedoms that we're going to be losing. And, you know, those 5 points I hope to spread across the country this summer as I travel around. And the first point of my 5 points is to repeal the Real ID Act, which we've been talking about, and also to repeal the mandatory national animal identification system. Those in the rural areas, the livestock owners, really do not need to have this burden upon them where they have to identify each animal on their farm.
Mm-hmm.
And those in the urban areas may not be aware of it, but it's a very serious problem if this mandate is put upon our livestock owners. So those two kind of go hand in hand there, to repeal the mandatory, the Real ID Act, and the animal identification, and they kind of go hand in hand there.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things, actually, that are happening with people's animals to smaller farmers, harassment, and it creates the appearance that what they want is for people not to be able to grow their own livestock or their own food.
The part about the, you know, the animal identification, that should be strictly market-driven. If it's in the livestock owner's best interest economically to tag and identify each of his animals, you know, he should be free to do that. If he gets added value out of it, that should be his incentive or reason for doing it. You know, some of the smaller farmers, it's going to be a burden for them to try and keep track every time they move their animals or identify them. So, again, this is one of those things that they should be free to do it on their own as they wish.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are the 5 points for America. And the second point is actually security and prosperity partnership, right, repealing that.
Yes, the North American Union, that is something that is... I think it's moving forward. We got to make more people aware of what's going to happen here. If this similar to the European Union, where our president signed a partnership agreement with Vicente Fox out of Mexico, and I think John Martin out of Canada at the time, to start the steps to form this North American Union, basically bring Mexico and Canada in with one union here, where the United States would lose their sovereignty. And as a part of this, they've got a what they call the NAFTA Superhighway, which will be built coming out of Mexico, and the first stop would be in Kansas City. And at that point, they would be, whatever we bring into this trade we bring into this country would not be inspected until it gets to Kansas City. And the country of Mexico is proposing that they have their people there to do the inspection. And I think that... to have goods coming in here, and we found out now that this is going to be China's goods that will be coming through Mexico in here. Right now, we're becoming more and more of a burden. We're becoming reliant upon China for more and more of our money and our goods, and this is not good. And this is something I visited with the people in Texas. They're working very hard to stop it down there, but we have to join forces with them. I'm hoping to form a coalition between Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, since we're the first stop here, to try and join forces and put up some opposition. As I said earlier, those in Texas are working very hard to stop the Trans-Texas Highway, as it's called down there.
That's one of the first things happening, but people are frightened about a lot of other things. Certainly there's a lot of... They're doing a lot of takings. They're using eminent domain to take a lot of land because it's a huge complex that stretches all the way across Texas.
Yeah, eminent domain would be used for this. It's like about a 24-lane highway coming up all the way up through it with other utilities and rail lines or whatever they need to bring the goods into this country. And it's being built by a foreign consortium and not even being built by the trade people in this country. So it's not just something that's confined here to the United States. Like I said, there's huge multi-corporations that are involved in this. And it's something we, like program like yours, making more and more people aware of what's coming down the line if we don't stand up and make it get put a stop to it.
And people run into, like, I'm in California, I know people on the East Coast, and they don't even know this exists, and they don't believe me when I tell them, because they never see it in the media.
That's true. There are several stories been written out there about the myth of the North American Union, because here in the heartland, since we're going to be affected by it first, you know, we're more and more people are becoming aware of it. But those on the coast, they find it hard to believe that, that this is becoming about. At some point, you know, if it's not stopped, it'll branch off with other superhighways running east and west once it gets to Kansas City, and then I think it goes on into Quebec. That's the first branch of the first line to be built, or the highway going up that way.
Mm-hmm. And the people doing it are actually NASCO. And
yeah,
that's
the
Tri-National Advocacy for Efficient, Secure, and Environmentally Conscious Trade and Transportation. It sounds so nice.
Yeah, it sounds so good, like we are promoting trade and, you know, this is going to be like a lot of things when they had NAFTA, just a one-way highway, bringing goods in with very little going back out. And like I said earlier, it's being heavily funded by the country of China, because they have a huge interest in a way to bring more and more of their goods in here. And with what's been in the news the last couple of 3 weeks, you have to wonder about the safety of the products and the food that we're buying from them. So, you know, if you don't have any inspection on it coming in here now, and nothing's to stop it till it gets halfway in the heartland of your country, you don't know what is being brought in or how safe it is.
And actually, the website is nascocorridor.com. And I would very strongly suggest that everybody go take a look at it, because it is kind of scary.
It is. It's they're trying to you know, build it or sell it that it's good for trade. And like I said earlier, this trade, you know, trade means that there's two people involved. This way, we just basically we're the ones that's selling, and very little of us that we're sending out of the country to be bought by other countries.
Mm-hmm. And so we have an incredible trade imbalance.
Yes, this would just to exacerbate that and make it that much worse.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's happening in parallel with this is that American law is being impacted, because we're moving to an actual acceptance of maritime law in these contexts, and also foreign law, because you're creating foreign enclaves.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we've been, you know, we're talking about one currency here. It'll be called the Amero. You can find some, do some work on the computer, Googling around, you can find articles on that, possibly what it looks like, an international driver's license. And again, this gets back to why they have to have the real ID to identify those living in this country for taxation and everything else. So that's why they're pushing so hard to get the real ID established, because that's one of the basic requirements they're going to have for this North American Union to work once they get the highway built.
And people think that this is something that's still sort of in the planning stages, but actually it's being built.
Yes, that's right. I think, and so they're coming out of Laredo, they're actually got some construction work. And, of course, part of the problem is you get, like Texas, I know they're fighting it there. We're getting some money. They need money for better highways, so you know, you give them some money to do build their highways in addition to starting work on this here. So it's one of those kind of a carrots. You give somebody something, some money there, and it's difficult to turn it down, but it also has some strength attached. In this case, it's almost a rope attached to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Texas is an interesting situation regarding the highway, because even though the people in Texas are adamantly against it, the legislators are voting for it.
Right. I think that's what I've been, the research I've done, that's what we found out, that, you know, those who are trying to figure out how to fund and build their highways want to get the money for it. But, you know, this may be a case where they need to listen to their constituents and the people in the state of Texas. They may also rebel like they did here a week ago on this amnesty or the immigration thing at the federal level, at least
mm-hmm.
the first time around.
Yes. Well, that's that whole thing is so frightening, it almost doesn't bear thinking about. But that isn't even, that's just only the second item on your list.
Yes.
And the third item is repealing the Patriot Act, which is something I can't even imagine an American that doesn't agree with that.
You know, as somebody said earlier, I went up and asked, how can you be against something called the Patriot Act? Well, you know, this Patriot Act allows unwarranted wiretaps on all Americans, and, you know, we know, found out the federal government has been caught multiple times violating this law, and we've got to restrain them. You know, it was about a couple of months ago the FBI admitted that they had been spying on people, looking into bank accounts, monitoring phone calls, internet, any of your personal records that they had no right to do. They had no they did not get subpoenas to back them up. And it's just a big brother gone wild here, you know. The original intent of it, or what they sold it for, was that they were going to monitor or watch suspected terrorists, you know. I'm not sure that we need to repeal it, and it needs to be possibly replaced with a very responsible surveillance on those entering this country that we actually think are possible terrorists, and not being subjecting our citizens of this country to this wiretap and surveillance that's been going on. It's just, it's another case of our government taking steps that they do not have the authority or the right to do.
Well, that's certainly true. And in regarding the Patriot Act, one of the things that we also happened was that nobody is so big and thick. I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of pages, and they had it ready in just a nanosecond. And obviously, it had already been prepared.
Very good point. You're very good point. Yeah, people thought this was came about as a result of 9/11, which was not the case at all. It was already prepared. And that brings up a good point. We talked about this. The Real ID Act was being sold because of the terrorists had some faults and fake driver's license. We had to do something to account for that there. Well, there, back in the 70s, there was an attempt to initiate a national ID card during the Carter administration. It was shot down. During the Reagan administration, it was brought up again, and he resoundingly rejected it. And then during the Clinton administration, the national ID card was buried in part as kind of a measure deep in one of his legislative packages. The president signed it, and it would have gone into effect, I think it was in the fall of 2000, but then there were some grassroots protests. You know, they found out what it was, and the measure was repealed. This was long before 9/11. So the fact that the Real ID Act of 2005 is all about fighting terrorism is false. It has been something I've been working on for a long time, and just like you said, the Patriot Act had already been something that they were wanting to put into effect, and 9/11 was basically the excuse that they were using.
And what is the timeline here? When did you think they started? They decided to start the North American Union? When did they cut the deal? It was obviously cut with corporations.
Yeah, I would say it's probably well back in the late 1900s or 2000, you know, this thought they started planning on this here, because you just don't come up with something like this and get these large multinational companies or those behind the One World Order to come up with it. So it's probably been in the planning stage for 10 or 15 years. And it was signed in, I believe it was in 2005 by the president. He officially signed the partnership agreement there that they were trying to sell the public on as being necessary.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, have you done the research, do you know which particular corporations are involved? Because there has to be somebody who expects to benefit enormously from this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm not enough research to give you names, but you can be assured that some of those who are heavily involved in the benefiting from the Iraq War are probably involved in it. Certain
so probably
large companies
Halliburton.
Like that, huh?
Probably Halliburton.
Well, that name sounds familiar, doesn't it? Yes.
It does sound awfully familiar. And actually, one of their longtime partners has been Koch Industries.
Okay. Yes. And, you know, like I said, there's some foreign companies or multinational corporations that are involved in this too. So we've it's sad that the people of this country have been stepped on and pushed aside for somebody's corporate greed, in this particular case, personal and corporate greed. And you know, I keep thinking back to what happened a couple weeks ago or a week ago when the people flooded the White House and the Capitol with calls. I think that's what hopefully we'll have a wake-up call and hear that we the people will take back our country and get back to being governed by the people the way it's supposed to, and not by corporate or political interest at the highest level.
One sort of hopes that they have so many plans in place, and they have so many contingency plans in place, which, of course, is one of the things that concerns people about Blackwater. and, you know, the other mercenaries that are now actually being activated on shore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I haven't looked to see whether or not Blackwater is being employed in relationship to security for the Trans-Texas Corridor, but, you know, it's a possibility.
Yes, it is. It's, you know, like you said, the people in Texas I know are very concerned and upset with what's going on, and, you know, you kind of hope that maybe the get back to where the ballot box will come back into play there, and those who be held accountable for what actions they're taking here come November of next year.
Mm-hmm. And actually, this leads us into number four, which is revised NAFTA.
Revised NAFTA, yes. We can't repeal it. I think it's got like a 20-year life or something, but then, you know, we have to do something about it. I can say, well, you know, we want to revise NAFTA. We want fair trade, but not free trade. You know, we need to stop these businesses from trading in America if their business practices in those other countries violate or not in compliance with our laws, such as, you know, the child labor laws or the sweatshop.
Mm-hmm.
Or poor working conditions, or, you know, extremely low wages, or if they're violating sensible environmental laws mm-hmm. and regulations, you know, if they should be complying with comparable standards in that country or that business there so we can do business with them. Right now, we continue to work or lose good-paying American jobs when they go out of this country, but yet the wages that they pay in the other countries are nowhere near what they should be, even though, you know, the wage would be lower, but it should be somewhat comparable. The pollution, the environment, they're disregarding sensible regulations, environmental laws that they should be abiding there. So we need to get back making them come up with minimum standards that they will comply with before we can trade with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that would... hopefully, you know, at the end, that would raise their standard of living, and both countries would benefit from it.
And, well, that would be a very, very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now...
And a good example of that is NAFTA. You know, supposedly, we were going to send our businesses to south of the border. You know, those down there would be employed. They would make decent wages. But then, you know, that's not happened. If that happened, why are they continuing to come north here? If we had raised their standard of living down there, then those that I've talked to that come from up here, you know, they would like to go back to their country if they could, you know, make a decent living there, but they come up here. So we've got corporations that are taking advantage of NAFTA by paying extremely low wages down there. But, you know, has the American consumer benefited by it?
Oh, probably not at
not.
All.
Not at all.
And they don't want us to benefit either. They
yeah,
want to hike up all of the prices and pump out as much money as they possibly can.
That's true. So we've, you know, NAFTA was, I keep thinking of Ross Perot, what he said when he ran for president down there. I think he could see the handwriting on the wall of what was going to happen when that went into effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And if you take a stand back and you can take a look at the whole flow of their plan, obviously all of the things, elements you have here are very much related.
Yes. And, of course, the fifth point to my 5 points to free America is the fact that all states in this country need to have the right to deport illegal immigrants. You know, right now, it's not illegal to be an illegal immigrant in any state. You know, it's only illegal to be in the country, and a lot
mm-hmm.
of people are not aware of that, and we need to have the right in the states to be able to arrest and deport those who we find here illegally. And the people keep asking me about this Real ID Act, you know, what's your proposal if you don't have the Real ID? I said, well, instead of this $14 to $23 billion that it's going to cost to implement that, let's give that money to our local law enforcement people. Let them help put a stop to our drug trafficking. Let's pick up these illegals. And let's figure out a way to start deporting them. Once they find out that we're going to get tough here, then some of them will leave. But in addition to that, you still have to have a fence. You have to have up some barriers at the borders to keep them from coming in. So as long as we got open borders, we can continually to fight to stop them here, but we have to do this on a two-pronged approach. One, stop the incentive for them to come here and start to deport them, and then do something to control the borders to keep them from continually coming in.
Well, one of the incentives for them to come is actually the fact that they come up here and they can get better services out of the government than Americans can. And certainly you'd think that one of the first things we'd do is stop funding illegal aliens so that they wouldn't get any services, and including school.
Right. And we need to stop, if they're illegal, that they cannot get free schooling or higher education. Some states we've passing some laws. I think federal says it, the law says it's illegal to go to a higher ed university or college. But, we need to put some teeth in that to enforce that. And I think, I've seen some other propositions that just because you're born here in America, even though your parents are illegal, that automatically makes you a citizens of this country,
anchor babies,
right? And now there probably is going to be a place for migrant workers, for a guest worker program. We have so many here. When we find a business, let's put the burden, not the burden, let's make them comply. If they need migrant or guest workers to come up here to work in their business, in their fields, whatever it is, that they keep track of, that they monitor them, and that they report all the wages that they're paid. And if they have to go back to their country, then they know when they're going. If new ones come in, we keep track of them that way.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, then we can start making these workers pay their fair share of taxes in this country, pay their local taxes to help pay. If they're going to our schools, then they can pay a share of what they're, the benefits they're getting from being in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are all definitely things that should have been happening a long time ago. But one of the other things, of course, is we know that the reason that they don't enforce the law that we have that would keep them out is because this represents a subsidy of the different corporations who want a cheap labor force. So one of the things that could be done is to actually charge the corporations retroactively for services that they have gotten for their employees this way.
That's true. And, again, I look at this list of things. These are things that should be happening at the federal level. They're not doing it. So it's a matter of the states here taking some action to do what we can here, or to start a movement to get the federal government to revise and repeal these particular issues that are a threat to the freedoms of this country.
Mm-hmm. And the way you've coupled these 5 points together, and like I said, they flow together very beautifully. They all make very great sense with each other. What kind of response have you gotten in, say, Missouri, from people who perhaps could provide some help for electing different people to Congress?
people who hear these 5 points, they almost agree with them right down the line. The Real ID Act, and like I said, the animal identification, especially in southern Missouri, they are very, very much opposed to it. And when people find out about the North American Union, they don't want this country to lose its sovereignty. They don't want this influx of as I'll say, probably Mexican truck drivers coming in here. Our truck drivers are going to lose their jobs. The Patriot Act, I think most people they fully understand how that's being violated. NAFTA, they understand what that's being happening to our trade bounds here. So the corporations are somewhat going to have to be held accountable where they're taking advantage of the shortfall or this violation of these, the North American Union, the Patriot, the NAFTA thing. As you say, I'm not sure how we go about making them pay for it, but at some point we have some laws on the books that need to be enforced. A lot of times that's the case. We always want more laws, and we do need some here to be more stringent and tighten down on the hiring practices and the subcontractors as far as those that's hiring the illegals. But
mm-hmm. Well, actually, one of the ways that we could enforce that is if you find somebody employing an illegal alien, you could simply make it policy that you're going to audit all of their books and find out how many they've ever had working for them, and then they're going to pay.
Right. The penalty needs to be very severe. I think probably most states have something on
punitive.
Their books now that's, I think here in Missouri it may have been a fine of like $10 a day or something. Well, nobody's going to be concerned about that.
Big
but
deal.
It has to be so severe that you lose your practice, your business license, maybe after the second infraction. And, it has to be where you knowingly employ somebody and realize that some are doing a good job of trying to screen those who apply. Some of them are not doing that and just taking the chance that they're probably not going to get caught. I'm not sure. We need more people, probably some more inspectors, a way to monitor this and maybe make an example out of those who are habitually violating this.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would certainly make it better. Have you done any thinking about the kind of attitude that you saw expressed toward, the Minutemen, when they first started up trying to police the border themselves?
Yeah, I've had some discussions with them. I think they felt like they were doing their civic duty to monitor the border down there and, not necessarily taking action themselves, but reporting those who were coming across the border. And, I think they felt like that was part of their responsibility to protect America and the future of it. And, whether it's a civic duty or not, why, I think they were doing what they felt was right and trying to do their part. So.
Mm-hmm. And you came up, when did you come up with the 5 points? Because you must have gone through a sort of an epiphany looking at these things and realizing how much they were related.
Well, probably at the beginning of this year when I started working on the Real ID Act there, and then the North American Union came along here. We have some people in Missouri that are very active in opposing that, of course, the Patriot Act there. So one day I sat down there and started thinking, putting everything together, how these were kind of related, and realized, to get to the end result here, we need to sort of tie these five together and push forward them on a multifaceted front here to get to where we need to be. They all kind of tie together here. You can talk about the illegals. Well, that's back to your Real ID Act if you really think that you're trying to stop them. But then they all kind of flow together. Just a matter of sitting there and looking at what we need to do to protect the freedom of this country and get back to where we want this country to be.
Mm-hmm. And you've seen the kind of impact that illegal immigration and the sort of economic policies that America is now enacting has on communities, and you've seen it in your own state.
We look at the loss of jobs here, they say, well, we need these immigrants or not necessarily illegals to do the jobs Americans won't do. Well, that is being blown out of proportion. We have a lot of good construction jobs that are going to those coming into this country that we have American workers who want to do them. They're probably some of these tradesmen and construction jobs are probably being paid at a cheaper wage, or some of them are being paid underneath the table. Some of our agricultural jobs, we may, as I said earlier, may have to have a workforce either on a part-time or on a 3 or 4 year rotational basis to come in and do those jobs where even at the decent wage, we have people who do not want to do those jobs. So I think we'll find out that there will be a necessary to have some people coming into this country to do those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's just a crime that there are Americans that can't get a job, but illegals come up here and they have no problem getting a job.
Yes, that's true. Somebody says, well, if we got people on welfare, we got a workforce here that's not being utilized yet, but then.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's really horrifying.
Yes.
And you must get good support from the people in your district.
Yes, I do. People in my district, people in the state, they strongly support this. My resolution to oppose the Real ID Act, it passed like 146 to 4 in the House, and it was 32-0 in the Senate. And that's pretty reflective of most states who have passed resolutions or bills to stop this Real ID Act. It's just the people do not want a national ID card. They don't want the intrusion of the federal government into their lives. They felt like that, that they've overstepped their bounds. They do want national security, but I think they're smart enough to see that this has very little to do with increasing national security And
well, not certainly our security. Our insecurity has been increased.
That's right. It's yeah, this real ID act will just lead to a horrifying identity theft thing. You have your database with everything in it, and you have to link it with other states, and now the Department of Homeland Security wants us to link this globally with other countries. And
oh, that would be horrifying.
I can't imagine trying to share your database with the countries where the terrorists are coming from. So
that it's kind of strange, isn't it?
They're trying to, you know, and they try and use this biometrics part in there, you know, and biometrics is not that reliable. It looks good on TV and some of these other programs, but in real life, it does not work that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, different question, different subject. You've been mentioned as a running mate for Ron Paul. Would you accept if you got the nomination?
I support the Ron Paul and issues he's working on. You know, he was one of the first pioneers who opposed this Real ID Act. He wants to get back to governing by the Constitution. Boy, that's a pretty novel idea.
Yeah, that is very novel.
Isn't that? Getting back to there, you know, he believes impulsively our foreign intervention needs to be looked at. I think he was sort of misquoted on that one debate, you know. And I think the American people are ready to stop, are ready to quit jumping into every fracas all over the world. So at some point, I think we need to take care of Americans here. So I do support him on almost all issues down the line. I'm not running for vice president. I'm working to these 5 points to America's freedom. You know, you don't look ahead to what may come about. So.
Mm-hmm. And what can people do to help you do this? You've mentioned getting in touch with their legislators federally and at the state level. Is there anything else that they can do? They can also donate, right?
Right. I am going to be traveling across the country speaking on this 5 points and stopping the Real ID Act. I'm speaking to the Southern States Conference in about a week and a half in Virginia. I've got several legislators from different states around the country that want me to come speak to them. And I've got a committee called Committee for America's Freedom for those who want to donate to it to help pay for my transportation expenses. That's all it's used for. So those who would like to
put gas in your car and get you there.
Put gas in my car, that's, you know, and pay for a little bit of lodging. That's all I'm asking for. It's the Committee for America's Freedom, and it's Box 601 at King City, Missouri. If they go to the website that Legislators Against Real ID, there's a way on there they can get the address or pay through PayPal or something, and we're getting some good support here now that we got it up and going. You know, it doesn't make any difference whether it's $10 or $50 or $100 or $1,000. It all acts up. You know, a lot of small donations, it helps just as much as one big donation. So I'm
Amen.
Very appreciative of those who've been supporting me here lately.
Well, that's you're doing a heck of a job, and I know that, you know, we're all very thankful that you decided to do what you're doing and that you're doing it. Because what would have been our fate if you hadn't?
You know, I think back on that, you know, I probably would have been successful in getting it stopped here in Missouri, but then, you know, if I'd have stopped it here and two or three other states had done it, this would not have stopped the Real ID. I always go back to about 2 months ago. There was a student from George Washington University called me one evening. He was doing a paper for his master's or doctorate degree, and he was doing on those who were changing policy in this country. And finally we got through, he says, you know, I did a little research. You just come from a little town there in northwest Missouri. He says, why are you doing this? I said, well, if I don't do it, who will?
Amen.
And he was kind of quiet, and he said, well, I guess you're right, but, you know, I'm not doing it alone. I've got a lot of other people out there who support me every day with their emails and their calls and their thanks. And so it's a momentum that's sweeping the country, and we got a lot of people that's stepping up there and saying, you know, this is enough. It's time for us to take back our country.
Amen. Well, and I'm so glad you could be with us today to share this. And I'm going to, again, urge everybody to go out and help you to get the job done and take back our country. Because
that's
it's
fine.
Got to happen.
Like I said, if they go on to the website, they can find the address there. If they want to call me, it's I'll give out a phone number. It's 660-535-6664.
That's fantastic.
So
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be on your program and help to spread the word.
Well, thank you, and God bless.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. And that's our show for today, Friday, July 6, 2007. At The Spiritual Politician, we root out the deceitful practices of those in power and expose them to the light. Those nasty sneak thieves who line their pockets stealing our freedom need to be smacked down hard so they can learn to play appropriately with others. Pointing out their strategies matters both for us and for them. How else will they know unless we make it painfully obvious? On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. This remains where we want to go today. It's up to each of us to ensure we reach the destination. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way.